right, we're holding at the beginning of the Gemara on Memtes on the Beis after the Mishnah. So to recap, the Mishnah had mentioned that if you have three people, then you say Nevorech, Shohal Mishaloi, and if you have three plus one, then you say Boruchu, Shohal Mishaloi. And then we said the 10, you say Elokeinu, and then we had one opinion in the Mishnah that says that you keep on adding names of Hashem as you go along, and another opinion that says that you don't. Okay, so Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says a general rule, Olam Yoti Odom is Asmim in Akhlal. A person should never exclude himself from the general cloud. In other words, that even though, as the Mishnah had said, you can say when you have four people by Mezuman, you can say Baruch Hu, better that he should say Nevorech, because Baruch Hu would imply you bless Hashem, but I don't have to. As opposed to when you say Nevorech means we shall bless, then it includes himself as well. So the question.
General,
this means excluding something in the problem. Well, that's what I mean. In general, that's what I mean. In other words, a person should always be speaking in his words of davening and whatever in a way that he's including himself with the Jewish people, rather than, for example, when he's saying Baruch Hu. Now, what about, Tosa says, what about, for example, when we have Baruch Hu in davening? Okay, so Tosfos asks, brings from the Yerushalmi, what about when we get an Aliyah, what about the Chazan says Baruch Hu? The answer is that then you say Baruch Hu Hashem Hamivoyach. Hamivoyach means the one who is blessed. So by doing that, he's showing that he's including himself in the cloud. He's among the people who consider Hashem blessed. But over here, where you say if you would be saying Baruch Hu Shalhal Mishaloi, then that doesn't necessarily include himself. I mean, Shalhal Nu means that. Shalhal Nu means that we ate. But fine, he's saying Baruch Hu, you bless Hashem. I can't be bothered. I ate, but I can't be bothered to bless Hashem. So it's different when he says Hamivoyach. Okay. So Shmuel says a person should not exclude himself from the cloud. Better he should be saying the Baruch. So the question is, we learned in the mission of Shloisha Vahu and Baruch. We said that if there's four, you should say Baruch, which seems to imply that saying Baruch is better. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says the reason is, well, because the mission has said Baruch. And the implication is, Rashi says, why would saying Baruch be better? Because it implies you are enough to be blessing Hashem by yourself, even if I wasn't here. So it's like giving them covered. Tosfos explains a little bit differently, that Baruch Hu, on the other hand, has an advantage because it's actually telling them to bless Hashem. Nevorech is not really necessarily we will bless. It's like asking permission, let us bless. So it's not really the same thing. Baruch Hu, on the face of it, seems to be better. So what happened to Shmuel's rule? The answer is Ema Ach Baruch Hu. The answer is no. What the Mishnah means is you could say Baruch Hu if you have four. Or Makomakam Nevorech Odis. Nevertheless, though, saying Nevorech is still better. Or Tosfos says, okay, maybe Odif over here doesn't mean better, but at least it means from the point of view of the Mishnah, it would mean they're on an equal level.
And
Odif doesn't necessarily, that's the point. Tosfos says, Odif doesn't necessarily mean preferable. So it can mean equally important. It can mean equally good. So as the Tosfos says, if the Rashi explains that it means it is better, but Tosfos says all this can just mean it's on an equal level. So Shmuel would be telling us, other things being equal, Al Yotzi Odom is Asmim in a cloud, therefore Nevorech has an advantage. But from the point of view of Nevorech, where on the one hand, as Tosfos said, it's only asking them for permission to bless, it's not actually necessarily blessing yet. And as Rashi had said, it doesn't imply an honor to them, because it's saying like, you know, you need me in order to bless. Versus Baruch Hu, which has the advantages against that. But on the other hand, if Moiti Olam is Asmoi, then Tosfos says, okay, what the Gemara is saying is at least they're on an equal level. Now, how do we know then that even with four, you could say Nevorech? The Amr of Adaba Abra, the Amri Beira, because of Adaba Abra says, they say in the Yeshiva, Tanena, we learn, it's in the next mission at the bottom of our Amr, Vav Nechlokin Ad Yud, that if you have six people ate together, they are allowed to split up and make separate mezumans until there are 10 of them. Mm-hmm. Once you have 10, then they can't, because then you may need to say Elokeinu. So now, like this, Iyam Mishlem Nevorech Odif, if you say it's better, or at least on an equal level, to say Nevorech Mishlem Ochin. Because again, Nevorech has the advantage of including himself, even though it has the disadvantages that we said before. Okay. If you say that Nevorech is acceptable when you have four people, then Mishlem Ochin Nechlokin. And that explains why six people can divide up into two groups of three, because either way, they're going to be saying Mezuman, either way, they're going to be saying Nevorech. Ella. But if you were to say that the point of the Mishnah is that it's better to say Baruch Hu when you have four people than a Mainachlok, and why would they be able to split up when there are six? Then they're downgrading from Baruch Hu to Nevorech. The fact that it's not like that, the fact that six people are allowed to split up, Ella, Lav, Shema, Minu, Nevorech, Odish. Doesn't that show that that nevarich is odif, is better.
That's a proof by in reverse.
Yeah, that's a proof. You know, exactly that. That if it was better to say baruch hu, then you wouldn't be able to split up six people. You would have to say only eight people could split up.
But you're using a conclusion to support the.
No, you're trying to figure out how we know that it's equal. How we know that when the Mishnah says baruch hu, doesn't mean you have to say baruch hu. It means you could still say nevarich. Either like Rashi says that there's the nevarich odif means nevarich is better, or at least the Tosfos is saying they're on an equal level. And the reason is because we can prove that, because otherwise six people would not be allowed to split up, because then they're taking away baruch and replacing, they're taking away baruch hu and replacing it with nevarich. That's a proof. I think that's fine. That's a valid proof. El Olav Shemam. Of course, it's a proof. It shows
that it's preferable.
It shows that it is equally acceptable to say nevarich for four people as it is to say baruch hu. If it was preferable to say baruch hu, then you would have a problem. So el olav shmamino nevarich adif. That goes to show that nevarich is better, or at least equal. Shmamino, that proves it. Rashi actually seems to have
it. Is better because baruch hu is
We just said, okay, no, we said that the advantage of nevarich is that he's including himself. The advantage of Baruch Hu, it's true, does have other advantages. But nevertheless, the Mishnah itself is not telling us that Baruch Hu is better. It's telling us that Baruch Hu is at most equal to Nevarich. Shmuel is telling us on the basis of Al-Yosi, Adam, Asim, and Achal, Nevarich is better. So if our Mishnah had meant that Baruch Hu was actually better, then you couldn't split up with six people. The fact that it's not like that, the fact that six people are allowed to split up, shows that there's no advantage to Baruch Hu over Nevarich. Therefore, instead, what we have is, at the very least, they're on an equal level, and you can say baruch hu with four people. However, Shmuel is pointing out, on the basis of al-yotzi, adam, asim, and achal, a person should prefer to say nevarich even when there are four.
Why can't you split by six with baruch hu?
Because if you need four people to say baruch hu, then you can't split six people into two groups of four. You're going to have
you could say ten, you can split them into six and four.
Pay attention, please. The next Mishnah tells us that if three people are sitting together, they cannot split up. Four people also not, five also not. Six are allowed to split up because then they can make two separate mezonos, each of three people. But if there was an advantage to saying baruch hu, as it says in our Mishnah, over nevarich, then it would not be allowed to split up six people. Then you could only split up eight people, because then you would have two mezonos where each one is saying baruch hu. The fact that it's not like that, the fact that you are allowed to split up six people into two groups, shows that there's no advantage to saying baruch hu over nevarich.
For six, but not for eight.
There's no advantage to saying baruch hu with four or more people over nevarich. Therefore, once you're able to say nevarich with three people, then the same thing, you're able to say nevarich with four people. Yes, you're able to say baruch hu, but there's no advantage in it. Therefore, when you're splitting up six people into two groups of three, you're still saying nevarich. You're not saying baruch hu. That's fine. It doesn't matter that you can't say baruch hu because there's no advantage to saying baruch hu over nevarich. That's the point we're trying to get at. I'm not sure what you're not seeing clearly over here. But, okay. Again, the Mishnah had said that with four people you say baruch hu. We thought that that meant the Mishnah is saying with four you must say baruch hu because there's an advantage to saying baruch hu over nevarich. Shmuel is telling us on the contrary, there's an advantage to saying nevarich. What we're saying is the Mishnah does not mean there's an advantage to baruch hu. The Mishnah means you could say baruch hu with four people if you want. But there's no advantage. There's no obligation, there's no advantage to.
Right.
And the proof is the fact that six people are allowed to split into two groups, even though neither group is going to be able to say baruch hu, because it doesn't matter. There's no advantage to saying baruch hu over nevarich. That's what we wanted to prove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Shmami, that proves it. Rashi seems to have a bit of a different girsa over here, that af baruch hu, that also baruch hu is equally acceptable. And anyway, the point is that from the Mishnah itself, we see there's no advantage to baruch hu over nevarich. And Shmuel is telling us, on the contrary, in fact, there is an advantage to nevarich, because then you're not excluding yourself from the generality.
Right.
But we thought the Mishnah said there's an advantage to baruch hu, and now we're saying that no, that's not what the Mishnah means.
Because
we see that six people can split. Tani nami hachi, we learn similarly in a braisa, bein shalma baruch hu, bein shalma nevarich, whether he said baruch hu or nevarich, ein tof senos al kach, we don't hold him to account for it. In other words, either way it's fine, even if he says baruch hu, we're not going to object to the fact that he's mostly a fasim in akhwal. However, v'hanach donin tof senos al kach. But the nakdonin, the precise people, the pedants, who are going to be picky about such things, tofsin al kach, they will object to him on the basis that he's being mosi asasim in akhwal. And that's how we do, is we always say nevarich, we don't say baruch hu. On the side, on that basis, on the side of it here, brings a girsa from the Aruch, not hanakdonin, meloshin nikud, but rather hanakronin, which literally means that the ones who pet, like when a chicken pecks at things. So it also means that the people who are picky at things and then pick at little details. Okay. Continues the braisa. Umribuchosef shall adam nikur and tamat chacham uimlav. Based on the expressions that a person uses in his brachas, we can tell whether he's a tamat chacham or not. Case that. What are some examples? Rebbe Omer. So Rebbe says, here's an example. We say in Mezuman, we say, Baruch Shalchanu Mishaloi Uvetuvoi Chayinu. So if he says Uvetuvoi, if he says, with his goodness, we live, Hareza Tamat Chacham, then it shows that he's a Tamat Chacham. Umituvoi Hareza Bur. But if he uses the expression Umituvoi Chayinu, then he's a Bur. Then he's an ignoramus. Because Umituvoi, Rashi explains, Mituvoi literally means from his goodness. That implies, like Hashem just gives us the bare necessity, the bare minimum amount of his goodness that's needed for us to live. And that's wrong to say it that way. Whereas Uvetuvai is we live with Hashem's goodness. Different explanation.
Uvetuvai is more expensive.
Yes, right. Marshall explains a little bit differently also that Uvetuvai would imply, like as if when Hashem gives us good, then it takes away from him. Like he has less good to give out now. Uvetuvai makes it clear that it's not like that. Hashem has the same amount of good to give as he did before. Amalei Abaye Rav Dimi. So Abaye says to Rav Dimi, "V'aktiv umibuchos chayivorech based yivorech based abdechal olam." You have a tefillah that David HaMelech says, where he says, "From your bracha umibuchos, from your bracha yivorech based abdechal olam, may your servant's household be blessed forever." The answer is v'she'el hashayim. It's different when you're asking Hashem for something. When you're asking, you're like a poor person standing at the door. You don't have the, you're not so brazen as to ask for a big thing. You ask for a little thing. Umituvcha from umibrachoscha, from a little bit of your, just give me a little bit of your bracha. But here, we're not asking Hashem. Because he was asking Hashem for something. But in benching, when we say, Baruch Shachan HaMashalei, Umituvai Chayinu, we're thanking Hashem for what he did, so therefore we have to mention expense.
It's not a request, it's a praise.
Because the request, Umibachoschi, Yivorach, based on the Chalolam, may, from your blessing, may your servant's household be blessed forever. So it's a request. So B'she'el Hashem. The question is, what do you mean? We can ask expansively by Hashem. We find a pasuk that says, open up your mouth wide and I will fill it. So you ask Hashem for whatever you want and Hashem will fulfill it. So why is David saying, umibirchaska? The answer is, that pasuk, is saying that a person can ask Hashem expansively to be successful in learning Torah and ask for whatever you want and Hashem will grant it. Not necessarily as far as other things. Now, where do you see that hachas pichav amaleu refers to Torah? So the Hakosev in Ein Yaakov explains, because the beginning of the pasuk is Anochi Hashem Elokecha Hamalcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. What did Hashem bring us out of Mitzrayim for? To receive the Torah. Therefore, we see that the pasuk is telling us about asking for Divrei Torah.
It says, where did it say?
In Capital Peyal, for Tzilim. It's the Shir Shoyim of Thursday.
In context, it's from Yitzchak
Mitzrayim. The pasuk says Anochi Hashem Elokecha Hamalcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Hasekticha Ma'amalei. So therefore, we see that the Hasekticha is referring to Divrei Torah. Another example. Here's another example where you have a difference in the wording of a person's brachas that shows whether he's a Talmud Chacham or not. Tanya Nami Hachim. Tanya, we learn in another brachas, Rebbe Omer, Bituvai Choyinu Harei Talmud Chacham. If he says, Uvituvai Choyinu, we live, then he's a Talmud Chacham. Chayim Harei Zabur. But if he says, with your goodness, there is life, then he's a Bur. Because that implies, like other people live with Hashem's goodness and I don't. He's not including himself again. On the other hand, Mahar Beloi Masni Yitcha, it's saying that he's Moiti Asmim and Akwal, like I said before. Mahar Beloi Masni Yitcha, the Chachamim of Mahar Beloi, which is the place in Babel, learned the other way around. That is the correct way to say is Chayim, not Choyinu. The last Hilchta can have Beloi, but the Halacha is not like the Mahar Beloi. The Halacha is like the first version of the Brayta, but the correct thing to say is the Retorei Choyinu. Okay. Another example, Amr of Yechanan, Nevorech Shechalnu Mishaloi, Harez Tamar Chacham. If a person says, as we say, Nevorech Shechalnu Mishaloi, the one from whom we ate, then Harez Tamar Chacham, Lemi Shechalnu Mishaloi, Harez Abur. But if he says, to he from whom we ate, Harez Abur, then he's a Bur, because then that implies, like he's not blessing Hashem, Shechalnu Mishaloi implies that he's the only one that everybody eats from him. But Lamisha Chalma Mishaloi implies that there's different ones. Some people eat from one, some people from another. So then it implies that he's speaking about the Balabais rather than about Hashem. And what about we say in the Haggadah, we say the bracha at the end, to the one who did for our fathers and us all these nisim. So wouldn't that also be implying, as if we're saying that different ones do different nisim? Amalei says that's different. There, it's very obvious that we're talking about Hashem. Man oved nisi kod shebrichu. Who's the only one who can accomplish nisim is Hashem. So obviously, when we say l'misha osa l'abesein v'lanu, that it's clear we're still talking about Hashem. But over here, since after all, there are people who sustain other people, there are balabasim who give food to people. So if you say l'misha chal l'misha loy, then it would imply that you're speaking about the balabai.
It's true for Jews, but for other people, it's not true.
Okay, what do you mean for other people? It's not true. Everybody is sustained by Hashem. There's some more directly than others.
I'm not saying, of course, that's the case. But they believe that there's other
people. Whatever, we don't care what they believe. The point is, when it says, when we say, and I got it, l'misha osa l'abesein v'lanu, obviously we're talking about Hashem. Okay. Another one, Amar Rav Yechanan, if a person says, Baruch she'achalnu mishaloi, if he says, blessed is Hashem that we ate from, that we, or Nevorech, actually, that it's talking about not the Baruch, not the response that everybody else says, but Nevorech, the one that the one who's leading benching says, whatever, if he says, she'achalnu mishaloi, instead of Baruch, Nevorech, yeah. She'achalnu mishaloi, that he says, that we ate from his, then he's a Talmud Chacham. But if he says, Alam Mazin, she'achalnu harei zebur. But if he says, for the food that we ate, then he's a boor, because then it sounds like he's blessing the balabas. It's chosen to says, if he's talking to Hashem, then why is he specifically mentioning the mazin? There's many things to bless Hashem for. So like this. So we say, so if he says shalchanu mishaloi, okay, specifically right now we're focusing on that we ate for Hashem. But if he says alamazin shalchanu, makes it imply as though he only has to bless Hashem for the food that he ate and nothing else. Now that would only apply when you're making a mezuzah with three people where you're not mentioning Hashem's name. So then if you say l'mi she'achalnu mishaloi or alamazin she'achalnu, it could be misinterpreted. But when you have 10 people where you are mentioning Hashem's name, muchamilsa, then it's clear that you're talking about Hashem. Then it's clear that you can't say that there were others that you're addressing. Then obviously you're addressing Hashem, and therefore it's okay to use such a lashon. Because it's done, as in fact we learned in our Mishnah. We gave the example according to the Tanakama of our, not the Tanakama, whatever, according to the Tana of the middle of our Mishnah, who said that for different numbers of people you say a different kind of mezuman, you add more and more names of Hashem. So we said whatever the mevorich, whatever the one who's leading the mezuman says, everybody else answers in a similar vein. So for example, we said the 10,000, they say, similar to what he says is what they answer after him. For example, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Elokei Atzvokas Yoshev Akruv Malamazin Shalchanu, and they use the words Alamazin Shalchanu, and that's fine because they're mentioning Hashem's name, so then it's clear
that
they're addressing Hashem and they're not thanking the Baal HaBayit.
It's only questionable when you don't mention the name. When they're
only mentioned, right. He got it. Okay. So, continued the Mishnah. Echad asor of echad asor ribor. We said that you say the same nusach whether you have 10 people or whether you have 10,000 people. So the Gemara says, hog for kasha. Well, then you seem to have a contradiction in the Mishnah. Amrik echad asor of echad asor ribor almaki adori ninu. You're saying whether there are 10 or 10,000, implying that 10 or 10,000 on an equal level. They both say, Nevorach Elekeinu Shalchanu Mishaloi. Then the Mishnah continues. This is what you say if there's 100. This is what you say if there's 1,000. This is what you say if there's 10,000. So what's going on? Amar Rav Yosef, like Kasha, Har Rav Yosef, really, Har Rav Akiva. We have the matter here. Okay. The difference is that the two parts of the Mishnah are like the two different opinions. The one that says that you have different numbers for different nuschos for 1,000 and 10,000, for 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 is according to Rabbi Yitzhak, Har Rav Akiva. Whereas the part that said whether it's 100 or whether it's 10 or whether it's 10,000 is according to Rabbi Akiva. The Tanakh, as we continue in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yitzhak Guli Omer Lefi Rav Akol Hem Baruchim. Because we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi says that you go according to the number of people that are there, because the pasuk says the Makelos Baruch Hu Elokim, praise Hashem in gatherings, which implies the larger the gathering, the more brachas, the more praises you have to say to Hashem. And the Mishnah has continued, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Mamatinu Rebeis HaKnesses B'chola. That Rabbi Akiva says, on the other hand, just like in Shul, we always say Baruch Hu Hashem, whether it's 10 people or whether it's 10,000. The same way over here, we always say Nevarach Elokeinu.
No difference.
No difference. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva, I called it Rabbi Yitzchak Aglieli, my Obed. Like, okay, what is Rabbi Akiva doing with Rabbi Yitzchak Aglieli's Kosik Makelis Baruch Hu Elokim? The answer is Mebori Lev Chidatanya. Rabbi Akiva would use it to teach us what it says in the following braisa. Hoyer Rabbi Meir Omer, Minayin Shafilu Ubrin Shabimei Imon Omer Shira Alayam. How do we know that by Kriyas Yamtov, even the unborn babies in the womb said Shira? Because the Pasuk says, Makelos Baruch Hu Elokim, in the gathering, bless Hashem. Yes, Hashem Nimakor Yisrael. They bless Hashem from the Mokor, which means the womb of the Jewish people. So we see that even those who were in the womb joined in the Makelos, in the gathering, when they all said the Shira. In fact, the Rashba points out that actually, you know, why should the unborn babies have to say Shira? And he says, because it's very normal that a pregnant woman has a sudden fright. Then she miscarries. Over here, they had all of a sudden the Mithraim are chasing after them, and they're so they were tremendously frightened. So under normal circumstances, you might have expected that some of them might miscarry. The fact that none of them did, those unborn babies whose lives were saved by that, I have to thank Hashem.
But what do you take a makor?
I mean makor, because the word makor means the source. So it can also mean the womb. The word makor, we had a nidah, for example, a number of times, means the womb. The Idach, what would Rabbi Yitzchak Aglieli say to that? Mimakor nafka. He says, you just learn that from the words Hashem Mimakor Yisrael. He says, I have the words Makelos Baruch Hu Elokim available for a different drasha. That's the more number of people, the greater the bracha to Hashem. And as far as this, that they sang Shira by the Yam, with the unborn babies, that we learned just from the words Hashem Mimakor Yisrael. Okay. Amar Rabba Halacha Rabbi Akiva. Rabba says, Halacha like Rabbi Akiva. That you have the same thing no matter how many. Once you have 10, then you stop there and you don't add anything more. Okay, so the Gemara tells Ravina and Ramchama Babuzi iklu lebeiresh kalusa. Ravina and Ramchama Babuzi one time visited the house of the Resh Kalusa, and they were having a meal there, and there were a large number of people. Come Ramchama, become a haber abdeimena. So Ramchama was getting up and looking around and checking to see if there are 100 people there to see if they should be saying the Baruch Hashem Elokim. Amalei Ravina, lo tzricha. So Ravina says you don't need to do that. Hochi Amar Rava, halacha k'Rav Akiva, because Rava said the halacha is like Rav Akiva, and therefore once we have 10 and we know we have 10, then already we make a mezuman for 10. We just say Nevarach Elokeinu, and that's that. Okay. Amar Rava. So Rava says in this connection, ki achlin and rifta bei Resh Kalusa, when we would eat bread at the house of the Resh Kalusa, mevarachinon gimel gimel. We would break up into groups of three and make a mezuman. Meaning, in other words, that Rashi says, the Resh Kalusa is spending a long time at his meal. We have groups of people that have finished their meal. So we quietly make a mezuman among ourselves, and then we bench, and then we just continue sitting over there, and we continue sitting over there until the Resh Kalusa has finished eating, and the people near him will make a mezuman of 10. So the question is, why? The liver who yud, shouldn't they break up into groups of 10? Why are they breaking up into groups of 3 and losing the ability to say Hashem's name? The answer is Shomer Resh Kalusa V'Ichad, because if they do it in a group of 10, then you have to say it in a bit of a louder voice. Because for 10 people to hear, you have to say it in a bit of a louder voice. Then the Resh Kalusa is going to hear, and he's going to be upset. Why? What are you? You're at my table. Where are you going? And making a mezuman of your own. So yes, the Rashi explains. The Resh Kalusa is taking his time finishing his meal. They're already finished eating, so they want to bench. So therefore, they break up into groups of three. Rashi says, what about that? It's groups of three. He's not going to notice because they can do it quietly. So even though Rashi goes on to say, even though they're losing the chance to say Hashem's name, and later on when the Resh Kalusa makes the mezuman with Hashem's name, they're not going to be yotze with it. Nevertheless, it's better that way. So the question is, so v'nifku b'birkas Resh Kalusa, why are they not just yotze with the Resh Kalusa's bracha and then be yotze that way? No, but the fact is, Rashi says they're still sitting around. But the answer is, I did avshu kula alma leishami, because it's so noisy over there, they're not going to hear. They're not going to be able to hear the Resh Kalusa saying, you actually have a machloikas apoiskin, whether does it mean that they have to be able to hear him just say the zimun, nevorech shachal mishaloi, or do they actually have to be able to hear him saying the entire benching? So there's a machloikas apoiskin on that, but either way, the point is that one way or the other, they weren't going to be able to hear him, so therefore they have no choice, so therefore they have to make mezumans of their own, and they can't make mezumans of 10, because then that would offend the Resh Kalusa, so therefore they're making mezumans of 3. You actually have. Now, in that so ordinarily, without that consideration, you wouldn't be able to. However, the Taz says, and a couple of other Achronim also mentioned similarly, that what you do have is, this is talking about where everybody is still going to be sitting there. But if you want to get going, if you have a group of people who've eaten over there and they want to get going, which is very common by Simchas, for example, you have. Simcha goes on for a very long time. And meanwhile, you have people who want to get going, then they're allowed to break up into a group of three, even where the Balabais is not going to object. Which is a very common thing, right? Simchas, that people get together in groups of three and make a mezumah. Well, that's the point. It doesn't matter. Even if he's not going, the point is here, Rava was saying we have a heter because the Reish Kalosa is going to object. But the Taz is saying that when that's not a consideration, if they actually want to get going, then they're allowed to make a mezumah of three. They don't have to wait until they can gather together 10. Obviously, if you can gather 10, and then you have a bunch of people who are getting ready to leave, and you can make a mezumah of 10, so much the better.
You know, we'll figure out that you see all the people leaving eventually, because they must have mentioned, they must have made it something, or
was
a matter
that
didn't hear them.
Maybe the Reish Kalosa didn't realize, it's a big place, but yeah.
So the halacha is,
when do we say in the next Mishnah that if you have 10 people, they can't split, that the Taz wants to say that's only if all of them are planning to stay till the end, then they shouldn't split up into smaller groups. But if some of them want to leave early, then they're able to.
So they're able to split in three. If 10 people want to split, if they're okay on their own.
If 10 people can want to stay okay on their own, then that's also acceptable. Yeah.
That's acceptable. Even if the ball is...
If the ball of ice is going to be knocked, then don't do that. Omer Rabba Tosfa, Hani Gimel Dekalchi Rifta Bahadi Adadi. If you have three people that ate bread together, the Kodim Chad Minai Uvaris Ladaite, and one of them went and benched on his own without waiting for Mazon, what happens is, the din is, they can be yoter with his mezuman, meaning they can still go on to make a mezuman, even though he already benched. You actually have machloikus, whether he has to answer to it or not, but the point is that if he answers, then for sure he can definitely count as one of the three, even though he already benched. Ihu leinofik bezimun didhu. On the other hand, he is not going to be yotze with their zimun. He missed the opportunity, in other words, to do zimun properly. Lafisha ain't zimun lemachreya, because the rule is you can't have zimun retroactively. So he already benched. So therefore, he doesn't have the mitzvah of zimun. But they are still able to, they're still able to make a zimun. Again, you have a machloek as a poskim, whether they have to have an answer or not, or whether just the fact that he's there still counts. It's worth mentioning, by the way, unfortunately, a lot of these dinim, as far as zimun, and some of the things that we're going to be talking about as we go on, about splitting up, about a concept that we're going to talk about on Omer Beis called Parach Zimun, many of those are in Simen Kuf Samech, Kutzad Gimel of Eruch Chaim. Unfortunately, most of that simon is missing in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, so there's a lot of these dinim that we don't clearly know what his opinion would be on it. We have to go back to the earlier post-sim, and then you many times have machlokes in what the actual dinim are. Right, so there are some of these dinim the Alter Rebbe refers to in other places, so therefore we have that for you. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Rabbi Shmuel, we had at the end of the Mishnah, we had a machloikus, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says that what you say in Shul is Baruch Hu Es Hashem, and Rabbi Shmuel said you say Baruch Hu Es Hashem HaMavorit. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Rachman Bapapa Ikwal Abay Knishta De Avi Giver. Rachman Bapapa one time visited the Shul of Avi Giver, either it's the name of the person who ran the Shul, or it's the name of the place where it was, whatever. Anyway, kum kara b'tikra, he got an aliyah for the Torah, so he got a kalein from the Torah, v'amah baruch hu es Hashem v'ishtik, l'ayam ha-mavarach. He just said baruch hu es Hashem and did not say ha-mavarach. Ob shu kul alma, everybody started making noise and yelling out, baruch hu es Hashem ha-mavarach, is what you're supposed to say.
He was supposed to say baruch Hashem ha-mavarach.
But they were all yelling at him, you're supposed to say baruch Hashem ha-mavarach. Omar Rava, so Rava says to Rafa Mapapa, pass your uchma, you black kli cheres, you black earthenware keli. Why does he call them that? So the reason is, Rashi elsewhere explains that the Tamar Chachamim in those times, such as Rafa Mapapa, were so busy most of the time learning Torah that they didn't take care of their appearance. They didn't wash their clothes very often or whatever. So therefore, it was like an endearment to him. You're such a Talmud Chacham. You are a real Talmud Chacham. You're very focused in learning, and therefore you don't take care of your appearance. So it's meant as a compliment. In other words, you are
sarcastic.
No, it's not sarcastic. It's meant as a compliment. You are a great Talmud Chacham. Nevertheless, Bahani quote Dalamalach. What are you getting involved in a machlokes? After all, even Rabbi Akiva agrees it is better to say Hamavarach. You just don't need to. In fact, the Tzlach actually has a long discussion where he says it goes together with what Shmuel was saying before, where again, where Tosfos quoted from the Yerushalmi, that saying Hamavodah puts you back in the klal. Rabbi Akiva had said it's not necessary to do that, and Rabbi Shmuel said, but you could, and if you do, then you have the advantage that you're including yourself in the klal. And Rabbi Shmuel says you have to do that to begin with.
And Rabbi Shmuel
says you have to. So, and even Rabbi Akiva doesn't say there's a problem with it. It would be better to. So better. So what are you getting involved in a machloket? Not only that, even if you're going to argue that whenever you have a machloek that's Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, here the world is noyeg like Rabbi Shmuel, and therefore that's how you should do it. You should be saying Baruch Hu Hashem and Baruch, which is, of course, the halacha, that is how we do it.
And we don't differentiate between the 100
and 1,000. That's a different thing. So earlier in the Mishnah, when we had the Machlokes of Yitzhak Grili and Rabbi Akiva, there the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. But when you have at the end of the Mishnah about Baruch Hu Hashem Amvorach, there the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel. We do say Amvorach. The Taz actually points out an interesting point over here. We learned previously, we had in the sixth parak, we had a Machlokes whether you say Moitzi Lachem Min Aretz or Ha Moitzi Lachem Min Aretz. And we had a case over there where one of the Amoraim, we said over there that the son of Rabbi Zvid, was said that he's an Adam Gadol, he's a great person, and he says Motzi Lachem Min Ha'aretz, and Rav Zeira is not very impressed, and he says what's the great thing that he's an Adam Gadol? If he had said Hamotzi, then it would show that he would show that the halacha is like the Chachamim, but what's the point of saying Motzi? So he said over there, so he thought that, okay, I don't want to get involved in machlokes. Everybody agrees that you can say motzi. The Chachamim is saying you could also say
hamotzi.
So the question is, the Taz said, so why over here don't we say the same thing? You didn't want to get involved in machlokes. What's the problem? So the answer is, the Taz says, when a person is saying a bracha or a tefillah or whatever, he should be doing one of two things. Either he should be demonstrating a chiddush, or he should be going in a way that's not going to be involved in a machlokes. In that case over there with motzi and hamotzi, if he had said hamotzi, then it would demonstrate a chiddush. Namely, we would have thought logically that the halacha would be like Rav Nechemia, that motzi is better, because Rav Nechemia points out of it there, the word motzi unequivocally means in the past, whereas hamotzi could be in the future. And the fact is, you're saying a bracha for something that already happened. Hashem already brought this word out of the earth. So therefore, you would think that the halacha there is like Rav Nechemia. And therefore, when he says hamotzi lachem, if he says hamotzi lachem min ha'aretz, there's not really much of a chiddush in it. That he said there's not really much of a chiddush that he that when he's saying hamotzi. So therefore, Rav Zeira, we're saying over there that the Chachamim say that everybody agrees you could say motzi. The Chachamim are saying that you say that you should better say hamotzi. So he said motzi, so there's no advantage in it. He's not showing that the halacha is like Rav Nechemia, because as it is, we would have thought logically the halacha is like Rav Nechemia. Whereas over here, just the opposite. We would usually think the halacha is like Rav Akiva against anybody else. So therefore, when he says Baruch Hu Hashem, there's no advantage in it. He's not showing any chiddush in it. The point is, Rav is telling him the halacha is like Rav Shmuel, but the point is that Rav from Bar Papa, when he's saying like Rav Akiva, the point is Rav is telling him, you think you're showing a chiddush by that, but there's no chiddush in it. Everybody knows that in general the halacha is going to be like Rav Akiva. So therefore, you're not showing any chiddush in it. You're not going l'kulei alma, because l'kulei alma, you should say hamavara. Even Rabbi Akiva agrees it's better to say hamavara. So you have no advantage over here. Not that you're showing a chiddush, and not that you're going l'kulei alma. Therefore, better you should be saying hamavara. Plus, anyway, the popular meaning is like Rabbi Shmuel, so therefore that's another reason to go like him.
As opposed to the case
with motzi and hamotzi, where if he had said hamotzi, then he would demonstrate, even though logically we might have thought the halacha is like Rabbi Nechemia, nevertheless the halacha is like Rabbi Nechemia. Mishnah says, Gimel she'ochlu ka'achas enin rashoin l'cholik. If you have three people ate together, they're not allowed to split up, because then they're going to lose muzumin. V'chein dalet, v'chein chamisha, the same thing is true if there were four or five of them. Vav nechalokin, once you have six people, then they're allowed to split up, because then they're going to have two muzumins of three each. Ad asara, until we reach 10 people. Va'asara, ein nechalokin ad chom. If you have 10 people, 10 or more, then they're not allowed to split up until you have at least 20 people. The idea is you always want to have that if a subgroup is going to make a mezuman, that their mezuman should be equal to what the whole group would have said. Okay. Shtei chavurah shoyu oichus v'vayisecha, another case. If you have two groups that are eating in the same house or in the same room, Vizman Shemitzotan Royan Elo Aseilu, if some of them see some of the other ones, so in other words, there's enough overlap between them that part of one group can see part of the other group, Harela Mitzayfin Lazimun, and they're able to join together for a Mazuman, the Imlav, and if not, Elo Mazamnin Lasman, but Elo Mazamnin Lasman, if not, then each one does their own Mazuman. Well, so we're talking about they ate at the same time. The question is, does it have to be that they all sat down at the same time? And you have poskim actually that say that if they sat down at different times, then they don't gather and they don't join together for a mezuman, even though they can see each other, which is relevant when you have people eating in restaurants, for example. You have, let's say, three people are eating at one table, and then three people come in and sit at another table and eat. Not necessarily do they join together for a mezuman because there was no intention to eat together and they didn't come in at the same time.
But here we're saying they should have.
But here we're saying that here we're talking about we have two groups that to begin with sat down at the same time to eat, intending that they're all going to eat at the same time. Okay. Other posts can disagree and say that no, even if as long as they're all eating at the same time, even if they didn't plan it to begin with. Okay. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Ein mevorchen al hayayin ad sheyitan l'seichem mayim, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that you can't make a bracha on wine, meaning you don't make the bracha, borei priya gofen, on wine, ad sheyitan l'seichem mayim, until you dilute it with water. As we know, that from throughout Shas, the wine in those days was very strong. Either it was very alcoholic or very syrupy or whatever it was exactly. It wasn't normal to drink it neat. They would dilute it two or three parts of water. So Rabbi Eliezer was saying that until you dilute it, it doesn't have the bracha, bar priya gofen. It would be bar priya. But mevarach and the Chum say no, you can still make a bracha bar priya gofen on it even if it's not diluted. Nowadays, wine is not diluted because nowadays wine is not made so strong to begin with, or syrupy or whatever. Many kinds of wine actually have. They put in a lot of kinds of wine. Actually, they add water. They make them out of concentrate or whatever, and they add water to them. But here we're talking about in those days they would make their wine very strong. They ferment for a long time. No, not sugary, strong as an alcoholic, or syrupy, as the case may be, and therefore you need to dilute it with water in order for it to be properly drinkable.
They're all
using their... So that I understand, but he says, we'll see in the Gemara why they're all.
Eating their own piece of bread.
That's what we're going to get to about their eating their piece of bread. We're going to talk about that in the Gemara. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. My Kamash Malon, what exactly is the Mishnah telling us when it says that three people, what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah saying that three people can't split up? Tanena, Chol Dazimna, we learned at the beginning of the Perek. Gimel She'echol, She'ochol Kacha, Chayav and Lazamin. We said that if three people eat together, they have to make a Muzoman. So what's the Chiddush that they can't split up?
Chol Dazimna
is one time.
One time.
The answer is Hokamash Malon. The answer is that this is the Chiddush. The Mishnah wants to tell us. Ki Hod Omer of Abba Omer Shmuel, like what Rab Abba said in the name of Shmuel, Gimel Shid Yoshua Lecho Ka'achat, if you have three people sat down together to eat, Va'adayim Loi Ochlu, they did not actually eat yet, Ein Rashoin Lecholik, then they're not allowed to split up. In other words, just the fact that they sat down, even though they didn't eat yet, already makes it clear that therefore they're required in the zone. Now, you have here Machlokas Rishonim. Does that mean literally that they just sat down even before they made Hamotzi and started eating? Or, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah brings out as a possibility. Or, the Rosh says no. It doesn't mean that they didn't start eating at all. It means that they started eating, but they didn't yet eat a Kazais. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. The consensus of the Poskim seems to be like the second opinion, like the opinion of the Rosh, that only when they started eating, only then do we say they have a kleos. But if they had just sat down, they didn't actually start eating yet, then they could choose to split up if they wanted. You also have, by the way, another related machlokas said also, whether this applies only when they sat down together to begin with, or does it also apply even if you had two people were sitting there and then a third one joins them, does that already require them to make a mezuman, or maybe not? Maybe in that case it's different. Okay. So that there you have, I think, the halacha. You have a machlokas on that. I don't remember what the halacha is on that one. Okay. Lishnachrina, another version. Amr of Abba Amr Shmuel, Hachi Katani. What the Mishnah means is like this: Gimel Shiyosh V'Lecho Ka'achat. If three people are sitting together to eat, Afa Pishakol Echad Ve'Echad Oichom V'Kikra. Here's your point, Yaakov. Even though each one of them is eating from their own loaf of bread, so they're not sharing their food at all, nevertheless they're still considered a kavirus, and therefore Ein Rashoin L'Cholik. They're not allowed to split up. Tosfos brings out that. Because you would have thought that, because that's the point. Tosfos is just giving us a preview of what the Gemara is going to say, that that even though, actually, Hagoyis HaBach has this part in parenthesis, meaning that he says that it doesn't belong in here, and he brings also that the Rif doesn't have. So it could be Tosfos didn't have that in their Girsa either. I don't know. It's a good point, but I don't know. An interesting point, speaking of the Bach, he says, given that you have two Lashonis in the Gemara over here, and they don't necessarily agree with each other, that means the Bach says, if you have two things, number one, they didn't start eating yet, or they didn't eat a kazayis, whatever, and they're each eating from the loaf of bread, then there would be reason to say that they could split up. Because the Bach is saying, only if it's one or the other, but not if you don't have either factor. Mm-hmm. Most of the other posts can disagree with the Bach and say that, no, we have to consider both factors. So even if they're each eating from their own loaf of bread, and they didn't start eating yet, or they didn't have kazayis, or whatever, nevertheless, they can't split up at that point.
Either way,
one or the other. Okay. Inami, another possibility, what the Mishnah is telling us, the Chiddush is, Ki Hadi Rav Huna, like what Rav Huna is telling us. The Amar Rav Huna, Gimel Shabo Mi Gimel Chavuris Enin Rashoin Lecholit. If you have three people came from three different groups, then they're not allowed to split up. Meaning, what does that mean? Amar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista clarifies what that means is, V'hu Shabo Mi Gimel Chavuris Shal Gimel Bnei Adam. Suppose you had each one of these three people came from a group of three. So let's say you had Reuben, Shimon, and Levi sitting over here. You had Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun sitting over here. Dan, Naphtali, and Asher sitting over here. So you have nine people, each one in each. You have three groups of three each. Then you have, let's say, Reuben, Yehuda, and Dan all leave their respective groups and come sit at another table. Neville, they still have to make a mezuman. They are not allowed to then split up because they already have a kliyos. And the point is, Rashi says, that means even if they don't eat any more together, even if now Reuben, Yehuda, and Dan are not eating any more now when they're sitting at the new table, nevertheless, they can't split up. They still have to make a mezuman because they were already chayev in mezuman when in the groups that they came from before.
Wait.
Omar Rava, so Rava says in this connection, that would only apply if the other ones from the groups that they left, so Shimon and Levi and Yisachar and Zvulun and so forth, if those people did not yet make a mezuman on them while they were in their place, then we say that Reuven and Yehuda and Dan now have to make a mezuman of their own. But if they made a mezuman on them in their place
before the three left.
One second. That's not so simple. Hold on. If the other ones made a mezuman on them in their places, parach zimun minayhu, then the din is the concept of zimun has flown away from them, and therefore that Reuven and Yehuda and Dan no longer can make a mezuman of their own.
So one second.
Listen, hold on. Let's try to explain, and then after we explain, if you have questions left, then we'll deal with it. So, Rashi explains like this. Suppose we have, now there's two possibilities. You can have that the groups they came from consisted of three people each.
Right.
Well, therefore, if Reuven, Yehuda, and Dan leave their respective groups, then you have nothing left in the original group enough to make a mezuman. So that would be the case where now Reuven and Yehuda and Dan have to make a mezuman of their own. On the other hand, you could have a case, Rashi says, let's say each original group consisted of four people.
Then they have enough
without them to be able to make a mezuman. So now if you have, so in other words, Rashi explains the difference is that If originally they had groups of four, and therefore now that one person left from each of those groups, now those remaining groups are still able to make a mezuman, then fine, these three who joined together should make a mezuman of their own. But if they actually joined them for the previous mezuman, meaning Rashi explains, we learned at the beginning of the perek, you have a situation where three people were sitting together, one of them had to leave and go out to the street or whatever, they are able to call him and he can answer to their mezuman from where he's standing in the street, as long as he can hear him. Right. So then, if that's the case, now, parach minai or zimun. Now they already have the chiyuv of zimun went away from them and it doesn't return. So therefore, they don't make a new mezuman in their place. Because they answer the rate. Now, so that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos explains somewhat differently. which is that you're talking about a case where we learned also earlier in the Perek, also on Memhalim days, you had a case where three people are eating together. One of them was not finished eating yet. The other two have finished eating. So we said he has to wait for them. They can make a mezuman at that point. He has to wait until they finish mezuman or hazan, as the case may be. Now, at that point, once he was there, then once he was there for hazan or for mezuman, then already the chiyuv of zimun has gone away, and now he doesn't have a chiyuv of zimun anymore.
After
hazan, they're allowed to leave, and now when he joins a new group, then there's no mezuman. Then there's no new mezuzah for that. So that's another possibility of this parach minayu zimun business.
Yeah.
Those are the respective opinions of Rashi and Tosfos. Again, you have more opinions of poskim about this business of parach minayu zimun, and when we say that if they regather together, when they join together and when not. And it's actually not so simple. And again, the problem is that we don't have that power of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch to know what he would agree with. I'll summarize over here what you have here. What the Aruch HaShulchan summarizes the previous opinions on the subject. So you have, he says, like this: if you have three people who each of them was from a group of three and they didn't yet bench. So now they have a chiyuv of zimun, as we're saying, because the original groups they came from did not make a zimun yet. So now they have to make a zimun together, even if they didn't eat anything else. According to the Rambam, that wouldn't work. The case would be actually that they were all together in one room and they were eating in different parts of the room. So therefore, relative to Birkas HaMazon, it's considered like one place. So therefore, they're chayiv in zimun. But
because
another room, then yeah. Okay. But if they now continues the Aruch HaShulchan summarizing, if again, like Tosfos says, let's say two of them already benched and he waited for them and he waited and listened until Birkas Hazon, then already Parach Zimun Minayu, then already he has no Chiyuv of Zimun because he heard up to Hazon from them, so therefore he doesn't have a Chiyuv of Zimun anymore. So therefore if each one of them is in that situation, then they don't make a new Zimun because Parach Zimun. He doesn't even mention over here. He doesn't even mention over here if he answered. Just the fact that he waited until they finished Hazan apparently is enough.
Didn't they make a zimun for him?
They made a zimun, but he just stopped eating and he didn't necessarily answer. But yeah, he was there when they said Hazan. Then you have another case. He goes on to say that let's say the case where Rashi is mentioning, if each group previously consisted of four, where then. So the remaining people of each group are enough to make a mezuman, so then also parach zimun, because the original group that they were with made a mezuman, even though he wasn't actually there for the zimun because he left and went to another group. Nevertheless, he doesn't have a chiyuv of zimun anymore because the original group that he came from made a mezuman.
Because
there was a group of four.
So he's not obligated.
He's not obligated because once they made a mezuman, once the original group that he was in made a mezuman, his original chiyuv of zimun went away because his group made mezuman. No, even if he wasn't there for Hazan.
Even if he wasn't there, how can he be?
Because it's not that he was yotzei. There was a chiyuv of zimun on that whole group, on the group of four.
Right.
Three out of the four made a mezuman. Then that makes it that now he no longer has a chiyuv of zimun. Now he no longer, even though he wasn't there, because his group already, because now parach zimun, because his chavura, the group that he was in, made a mezuman.
They were four.
They were able to. Once he left, they were able to make a mezuman. Right. So if he makes again, if he eats again, then that's a little bit different. Yeah, but it's not so simple. It would have to be really that if he washed again and made another hamaisi or whatever. But yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you have three groups of four, and two groups leaves before they did the zimun.
Yeah.
And one leaves after they did zimun. What's the halacha?
So 1 second. So you had a group of four?
Three groups of four.
So one of them left before zimun. So we said
two of them left before.
If two of them left before zimun, then you have the same problem as if you had a group of three and one of them left either way.
And one didn't.
The ones who left have not yet been yoseh, they're chayva of zimun, because the remaining two can't make a mezuzah.
But that's my question.
Therefore, they're still chayva and zimun.
But the one left and was after they made zimun.
Whichever one was there at the time of zimun, we say parach zimun minay. Whichever one was not there, the one who left. Okay, so what you have is like this. The one who left before, okay, so then no, what you would say is the one who, no, both of them would be, because the first one who left, you had a group of three without him who still can make a zimun, and we're saying parach zimun minayu because he was part of a group that already...
There were four people, you said. No, three people come out from a group of four. Each one from a different group.
I understand, but the point is,
two of them
came from one group? Fine. That,
two of them came, no, they each came from a different group, but two of them was before... They made zimun, and the last one was after they made zimun.
Again, if they came from groups of four, we're saying there's no difference. Whether they came before or after zimun, either way, we're saying part of zimun minayu. Either way, we're saying that they had no longer have a chiyuv of zimun because the group that they came from made a zimun, and therefore, so
and
they lost out. If they came from a group of three, then it's different whether they went before or after zimun.
So there's two that came before. And one after.
Okay, so it depends whether they came from a group of three or a group of four. If it's groups of three, then it depends whether they went before or after. If they went before, then they still have a chayv of zimun. If they went after, then they don't. Okay, ask me afterwards. Amar Rav, Menon Minalov. So Rav says, where do I get this idea of parach zimun, that once you have a group no longer has a chayv of zimun, then it can't be restored even if a new group is formed that's large enough? It's not, because you have it in Mishnah, in Kalim. If you have a bed, which a bed is made out of various pieces, if half of it was stolen, or half of it got lost, or belonged to two brothers or two partners, and they divided it up among themselves, they divided up the pieces of the bed among themselves, now that bed, even if it was tameh before, the tumah goes away from it by the fact that it was broken apart. If they then restore the bed and put it back together, reassemble the bed, then it's makabel tuma from now and future, but not the original tuma does not go away. Alma, meaning mekano labo, aim lachrei aloi. So only from now on is it makabel tuma, because now it's a functional bed again, but not retroactively. Alma kiven de pagua parach latumina. So we see as soon as they split it apart, the tuma went away, even though they didn't take it to the mikveh or whatever. So, and it doesn't, and the old tumma doesn't get restored when it's reassembled. Hachinami, the same thing. Kibun to Azman Alaihu, once they made a mezuman on them, again, when they came from groups of three after the zimun, or as Rashi is saying, when they came from groups of four, even before the zimun, then parach zimun minayu, the din of zimun, goes away from them and does not get restored, even though now they have a new group of three. Made up of people from the different groups.
What applies? The tumor doesn't necessarily...
We assume that it does, unless we have reason to say otherwise.
Because
once you have, it was disassembled, and then reassembling, and does not restore the original thing. We said in the Mishnah base chaburis, if you have two groups, as long as some of them see the other ones, and they can join in for a mezuman, if not, then not. Tana, we learn Rabbeinu, and yes, shamash by name. If there is a waiter going back and forth between them, shamash mitzarfin, then the waiter combines them together, and they're able to make a joint mezuman.
Both groups together
are able to join as a mezuman. Tosfos says, even if they're in different rooms, as long as you have people, as long as you have waiters going back and forth between them, then they would be able to. I guess you mean that the waiter is washing and eating some food also. Tosfos says, you would have to have, though, all of them, as we said before, you have to hear Birkas HaMazon from the one who's leading it. If you have, let's say, sometimes you have in very large chasanas, you have different people in different rooms of the hall or whatever, if they're all able to hear the mavarech, then they can all join together in one mezuman. If not, then they have to make separate ones. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Ein mavarechin al hayayin. We said Ein mavarechin al hayayin. We say, Rabbi Eliezer had said, you can't make a bracha on wine, bo pri agafen, until it's diluted with water, whereas the Chachamim had said you could. So let's learn about that. Tana Rabbanan, Yayin Adshalay Nosam Osechim Mayim, Ein Mevorchen Ola Boyer Pri Agafen, says Rabbi Eliezer, you don't stand at Boyer Pri Agafen, because again, it doesn't have the importance of wine yet, because it's not really drinkable like that. The whole point why we have a separate bracha, Boyer Pri Agafen, for wine, is because wine is more meshubach, has a higher level, it's more important than grapes. And the grapes that it came from. But when it's not drinkable yet, because it's not diluted, then Rabbi Eliezer says it doesn't yet have that importance, therefore it still stays very free. Ela Bofia, Sita Bofia, the Notlim in Menelia Gaim. Also, Rabbi Yazar says, you could use it for Natilas Yadayim, because it's May Pavis, because it's just considered fruit juice at this point, and therefore you could use it for Natilas Yadayim. So hold on, that's not the universal opinion. We'll get to different understandings of the Gemara.
That's one that hasn't been diluted.
One that hasn't been diluted.
It has fermented, but
Mish and not on the Sechei Mayim, once you poured water into it, once you diluted it, and then you stand at Bofri Agafa, and the proper bracha, the Ein Notam Menel Yadayim, you cannot use it for Natilas Yadayim. Divir Rabbi Yazar. So says Rabbi Yezer. Either way, even if it's not diluted, you do stand at Bofri Agafen, because even if it hasn't been diluted yet, it still has the importance of wine, as we're going to see in a second why. And you're not allowed to use it for Natilas Yadayim. Rashi brings a girsa over here from the Halachas Gedolos that says that it's the other way around. Before it was diluted, you can't use it for Natilas Yadayim. After it was diluted, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you could. And the Chachamim are saying, either way, you can't. However, Rashi says, I don't like that here, because the fact is, in Tosefta, it's not like that. Tosefta is a collection of brides. Yeah.
So
it doesn't have that.
He
says Tosefta. Halachas Gedolos. Baal Halachas Gedolos is one of the Goyim. He had a gift like that. Okay. Fine. So, okay. The question is, Keman Ozla Hodu Amma Shmuel Oito Odom Kol Tzrach of the Path, which opinion would it follow, this that Shmuel says that a person can do whatever he wants with bread, which means, in other words, pashtus, the same thing would be true as far as wine. That we're saying, you're saying that you can wash your hands with wine if necessary. That seems to be Keman Kerab Eliezer. That seems to be like Rabbi Eliezer. Because Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to wash your hands with wine, and in other words, it's not considered wasting food. By the same token, Shmuel seems to be saying that you can do whatever you want with bread, which implies the same thing. Although Tosfos says that Tosfos brings from a Gemara and Shabbos that even Shmuel would make a distinction between whether what you're going to be using the bread for is going to make it repulsive and not edible, but not that a person is not going to want to eat it, versus where it's not. So even Shmuel is not saying that you can just do anything with bread. So how does that fit with Rabbi Eliezer over here? Tosfos says that actually what it is Shmuel would be saying that what it is that you have Shmuel would be saying that there's a case where you're allowed to use bread. It's not considered bizoyan of food to use it for some purpose. However, Shmuel would limit that to where it's not going to ruin it for eating. And then Rabbi Eliezer would go beyond that and say that you could even use it for a purpose that is going to ruin it. You have other explanations of Rishonim on it as well. But anyway, the question is, the Chachamim do, on the other hand, agree with Rabbi Eliezer when it comes to the Kos Shel Bracha, when it comes to the cup of benching, there they agree that you can't make a bracha on it until you actually pour water into it to dilute it. My time, so why is that? I'm negotiating, but in Mitzvah and Amukha, because after all, you do need to do the bracha in the best possible way. And therefore, when you have the wine, it's not diluted. It's not really normally drinkable, so it's not really the best possible way to do it. Tosfos points out that later on, we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that the kosher bracha has to be chai, and one meaning of chai is undiluted. So Tosfos says one meaning of it is that you should dilute it only after you pour it into the kosher. Or another possibility, Tosfos brings a couple of other possibilities, what chai is. But in any case, the actual wine, when you're going to be drinking it for the kosher bracha, should be diluted. Okay.
We don't have this
issue today, right, because our wines generally don't have to be diluted, right? So the question is, but we have to ask, according to the Rabbanon, why would you be making Bofri Agafen on undiluted wine? Lamai Chazi, what is it suitable for? How could you say that it has the importance of the bracha on wine? Amar Rav Zeira, Chazi Lekuyotin. Rav Zera says, because it is suitable, you could use it for kriyoti, which Rashi says means various kinds of recipes involving wine, where you mix in other ingredients, not water, you mix in other ingredients. For example, you have other gemaras in other places that mention a type where they would mix into it honey and pepper, and another kind where they would mix in different other kinds of liquids. So those kinds of things you wouldn't first dilute the wine and then mix in these other things in there. So you have another one where you mix in what is it? I think warm water and shemen afarsima and balsam oil, whatever. So those kinds of things you would use undiluted wine. So the Chachamim hold that therefore undiluted wine has a certain importance of its own even without being diluted with water. So therefore they said you could say very priya gachan on it.
The
maichazi means what's it suitable for? Okay. So going back to Shmuel and Rabbi Eliezer, the one possibility actually you have Rishonim who learn that Shmuel argues with the Spraisa. This that was saying Oisa Adam Kol Tzrach of the past, that Shmuel would be saying definitely based on the Gemara and Shabbos that Tosfos brings, Shmuel agrees that you can't use past for something that's going to ruin it. The question is, we're going to mention soon about other things that you can't do with past, the question is, does Shmuel disagree with that? As far as washing your hands with wine, now here you have a Machlokes Rishonim. When we say over here that the Chachamim are saying that you can, first of all, when we say Ein Noitzen Hemen El Yadayim, is that the proper Girsa, or actually is the Girsa that they're saying you can wash your hands with it? And then the question is, are they saying that washing, meaning as far as when you require Api Halacha to wash your hands, like for bread, or do we mean washing just like you're allowed to wash your hands with it to get them clean? So you have a machloikas rishonim, you have a machloikas aposkin, whether you're allowed to do netilas adayim with wine. Whether we say that you're allowed to or not allowed to, depending on the different understandings of our Gemara over here. So Shulchan Aruch mentions that l'chatchila albisa you should be using. The point of the machloikas is like this. You have a Gemara in Cholin that discusses what kind of water you can use for netilas adayim, and it says you can't use water where, for example, the color of it has changed because, for example, stuff fell into it or whatever. So the question is, what about fruit juices or whatever? Would we say the same thing? So one possibility, some poskim say that yes, some rishonim say that yes. In that case, you can't wash your hands with any kind of fruit juice. So therefore, the halacha would be you can't wash your hands with diluted or undiluted wine. Others say there's a difference between water that was originally colorless and now has gotten ruined by having something falling into it versus mayperis, which are in their original state after all. Maybe you could use them. The actual halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch is obviously the chila you shouldn't, but if you don't have anything else available, then yeah, you can use wine. Yeah.
Or sticky. Or
okay, sticky, food. Right? But still, and in a pinch, you can. Yeah. Okay. Dalad dvarim nemru b'pas. We learned in a braisa there were four things that the Chachamim said about bread. Number one, ein manichim basar chai al pas. You're not allowed to put raw meat on the bread because then the meat becomes disgusting. Well, because you have all the juice from the meat or whatever in particular, actually.
You can't have hamburgers.
No, that's not raw meat. Hamburgers are cooked.
The bread becomes
disgusting. That's the point. Because you put raw meat on the bread, then now nobody's going to want to eat the bread because it's got meat juice and whatever on it. And the Rosh, not the Rosh, Ben Yonah says also, not only that, you have the blood from the meat gets onto the bread and then you have to scrape it off, but you have to wash it off or whatever. And if you wash bread, then it becomes disgusting. Well, no, but that would be raw bread.
Raw meat, yes.
Number two, in Ma'avirin Kos Mole Alapas, you should not pass a full cup over bread because then some of it might spill on the bread, and again, it'll... In other words, you have a piece of bread on the table, don't pass the full cup over the piece of bread because then you're going to, then you, if you spill it on the bread, then the bread is going to be disgusting and it's not going to be edible. Number three, the ain't zirkin if a pass, you're not allowed to throw bread. Number four, the ain't zirkin if a ka'ar if a pass. Number four, you're not allowed to let's say you have a bowl which is wobbly a little bit and you want to put something under one side of it to hold it up. You're not allowed to use bread for that purpose. Now here you have again, according to Tosfos, we would be talking about where that's going to cause it to become disgusting. then you're not allowed to. But
right.
if the bread, but if you have, because for example, a soup might spill on it. But if, let's say the soup is not going to spill on it, then you would be able to. According to other Rishonim, Shmuel might be arguing with this Braisa and saying, or no, I have that backwards rather. That if there's two possibilities. One is that Shmuel basically agrees with Rabbi Eliezer, where he said before Rabbi Eliezer had said you could wash your hands with wine, so there's no problem as long as the food itself is not damaged. So therefore, the Shmuel would disagree with this Braisa and say that you could hold up a bowl with bread as long as the soup doesn't spill on it. Whereas you have other Rishonim who would learn that no, Shmuel would agree with this Braisa that you can't that you can't do that at all, even if in this particular case the bread is not going to get damaged.
It's designed for the bread.
It's designed for the bread. He used it to hold up the bread. Okay. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Amema umazutra v'ravashi kochu rifta bahadi abdodi. Amema umazutra and ravashi, one time we're eating bread together, we're having a meal together. Aisil kamayo tamri v'rimani. They brought before them dates and pomegranates. Shuffle Mazutra took some, Potak Lakameza Ravashi Distina, and threw a Distina in front of Ravashi. Rashi explains that Distina means a piece of cooked meat. Marshall says, what are you talking about? Cooked meat is something where if you throw it, it's going to get disgusting. It's going to land in Yeah, you're not going to be able to eat it afterwards. So Marshall says, apparently then the Rashi over here maybe belongs someplace else in Ostrovia, and what it would mean is he threw him a date or a pomegranate or whatever. Amalei. Don't you agree with what we said that you're not supposed to throw food? Hey, he's asking, don't you hold what it said?
I understand, but why did he throw it?
So 1 second. He threw it because he wanted to throw it to him, whatever. But we say that you're not allowed to throw it. He says, now he's a past Tanya. Mazutra says, because that's only talking about bread. Other kinds of food you're allowed to throw.
Right.
So he says, we have another braisa that says, just like you're not allowed to throw food, bread, you're not allowed to throw any other food as well. So why are you throwing this food? Amalei, so Mazutra says, don't we have yet another braisa that says, even though you're not allowed to throw pas, but you are allowed to throw bread. You're not allowed to throw bread, but you're allowed to throw other kinds of food. So therefore, what's the problem with throwing this other food? So the answer is there's no contradiction. It depends whether the food is going to become disgusting when you throw it versus not. For example, Rashi says, let's say, for example, ripe figs. If you throw them, then they get squashed when you throw them. When they land, they get squashed. So therefore, that you're not allowed to do. But if, let's say, for example, you have nuts or other hard foods like that where nothing that don't change after being thrown, then you would be allowed to. Okay.
It doesn't say why he threw it.
It doesn't say why he threw it, but not just because he was far, far away at the table, whatever. I don't know. We learn in this connection of braisa, you're allowed to run wine in pipes before the chosin and kala because of the simen tov. It's not considered bizoyan, Rashi says, because eventually at the other end of the pipe, you have a keli to receive the wine, so it's not actually going to waste. You have other Rishonim, the Rashba, and others say even if it does go on the ground, it's allowed to because of simcha, so therefore it's allowed. The zokin the name Kloyesberg goes in. You're also allowed to throw in front of the chosin and kala toasted grain or nuts, also as a good simon, like we do nowadays by an offeruk. The mosachama avalu mosachshom, but only during the summer, not during the winter, because during the summer the roads are dry, whereas during the winter the roads are muddy, and therefore the food is going to get muddy. Kloyes is toasted grain. The Tosfos says nuts, you would think there's no difference. Either way, you have a nutshell around it. But nevertheless, nobody wants to eat it after it landed in the mud.
Shelled nuts? What?
No, unshelled nuts.
Unshelled nuts.
Unshelled nuts. Even nuts with their shells, nevertheless, no.
Shelled nuts.
Shelled means the shells are removed. That's how it is in English. Unshelled means that they still have the shell on them. Anyway, so even if they're unshelled, even if they still have the shells on them, Tosfos says still nobody's going to want to kick them out of the mud and eat them. So therefore, you're not allowed to. But you're not allowed to throw rolls of bread, not during the summer, not during the winter, because even during the summer, they're going to get squashed and they're going to get damaged, and the clock points out anyway. I mean, we said before, you're not supposed to throw bread, period, so therefore that's it. Okay.
Because of desire.
Yeah. Well, because so we said, there's a concept of bizoyan. On the other hand, you have a concept called oisa adam kol tzracha b'pas. You are so the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is you are allowed to use bread where it's not going to make it inedible or disgusting or whatever afterwards. For example, let's say you need it to hold up an end of a plate or something, then you can do that. But otherwise, if it's gonna get disgusting, then no.
If you don't
have forks and knives. So actually, so now you bring up a good point, because Tosfos mentioned, let's say, for example, a person is eating daiso, which is porridge, and let's say he wants to pick it up with a piece of bread. So you're allowed to, Tosfos says, because you're allowed to do that, because after all, you are eating the bread afterwards. So even from a sechta seferim, you're not supposed to do that unless you're eating them together. Okay, so Tosfos says maybe that's not like Shmuel. So the actual, what the post can say is, ideally, what you should do is eat a little bit of the bread each time. Don't just eat the daiso, whatever it is that you topped up with the bread. Eat a little bit of the bread with it. Then the design. Eat a little bit of the bread with it each time, and then you don't have a problem. Okay. Omer of Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says in this connection, speaking of food that's going to become disgusting versus not. Shochach v'hichnif oichum v'seich piv v'leid bracha. If a person forgets and puts food in his mouth without a bracha, m'saukan l'san echad m'varis. Then what we should do is move the food to one side of his mouth and then make a bracha. Now, Tanya choda boilon.
Move it
to one side of his mouth. One second. Tanya it choda boilon. Now, you have various braises on it. One braise says you should swallow the food first. V'tanya idach proton. Another braise says you should spit it out. V'tanya idach misalkan. And a third braise says you should move it to the side. So what is it? What do you do? The answer is, like Tasha, ha de tanya boilon is v'mashkin. When do we say you should swallow it? It's talking about if it's a drink. You can't spit it out, because then you can't move it to one side of your mouth and be able to make a bracha. You're not going to be able to make a bracha with a cheek full of liquid. You can't spit it out, because it's going to be ruining it. It's going to be baltashit. So therefore, you swallow it first. There you have, by the way, machlokas rishonim. Do you afterwards, so first of all, the Ravid says that if you have more of the same liquid, then what you should still do is spit it out. Spit it out, because you'll have more to drink afterwards. Then you say a bracha, and then you continue drinking. The Rambam disagrees with that. But in any case, you also have a machlokas. Let's say he didn't have any more, and let's say he did swallow it. Does he then afterwards make the bracha shakol, or hagofen, as the case may be? Do we say that once he missed the bracha, then he missed it? Or do we say that he should still make the bracha after the fact? They have a machlokas I posted about it, and because, as usual, with suffix bracha, so it's lahakol, so you don't. But again, if you can do like the Ravid, and you have more of the drink available, and you can spit out what you have, then better you should do that. Okay. V'hodetanya pelton, the braisa that says you spit them out, is talking with midyadolim manis. It's talking about the kind of food where you put it in your mouth, but even if you spit it out, it won't be disgusting. You'll be able to eat it afterwards. So let's say, for example, you're eating peanuts or other such things. Let's say, you know, you can spit it out and you'll still be able to eat it afterwards.
You don't spit it out, but take it.
No, take it out of your mouth, whatever. V'hodetanya misalkon, the braisa that says you move them to the other side is the midyadolim manis. It's talking about the kind of food where if you take it out of your mouth, it'll be disgusting, and you're not going
to
want to eat it.
Meat or...
like meat or berries or whatever. Yeah. Soft food. Because he moves, that's why he moves it to one side. So the question is, so why, even if he's eating peanuts, let's say, why shouldn't he move them to one side and make the bracha? Why do we require it to take them out of, why do we require him to take it out of his mouth? The answer is Tirgum Rabbi Yitzchak Paskasa, Kamed Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'oven, Mishmed Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yitzchak Paskasa explained in front of Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'oven, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum Shinem, Yimoli Piti Vasecha. Because the Pasuk in Tilim says, my mouth should be full of your praise. So ideally, there should be nothing else in your mouth when you're making a bracha. So when the food is going to become disgusting, then you have no choice. Then we allow it, because otherwise, busy right. But otherwise, when you have peanuts or other hard food like that you can take out, then you should do that in order to be Mekayim. And again, when it's liquid, but you have neither option, then you swallow it, although again, according to the diabetes.
And he wants to shackle, you have to swallow, and it has nothing in his mouth.
And then before he makes another bracha, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So we continue tomorrow, that's the chance.